You're here. So nice to
Yay.
see you. I was just going to say, like, somebody throw him the curveball, the one that he can't answer, the one that's not thought. Come on, somebody's got to have it, right? And if not, it's down to me. We've voted that it's going to be me if nobody else comes up to the one that throws you.
I kind of hope actually that something turns out to not be thought, because then I get all my excuses back and I miss them. Yeah, they used to serve me so well.
So I'm just saying, I have laid the foundation today. I've gone for it. I was like, bring them all to the table, all of the things that are not thought. You can't use that line today.
Oh
So
dear.
on that note, that is how I have opened the day. Over to you.
Excellent. Well, I want to open the day a little bit differently. Not, you know, not you know, feel free to do whatever Lynn wants you to do. But I was thinking about what is it that makes our obstacles look like they can stop us? Right? In other words, what is it that makes an obstacle, because clearly there are things that get in your way as you're trying to create what you want in your life and your world. Why does it sometimes look like an obstacle can stop us, when at other times it just looks like an obstacle, like something that needs to be dealt with? And it struck me, and I'd be interested, I mean, if you see something, an additional reason to the two that I'm going to share, then I'd be genuinely interested. But the two things that I see are, we believe our prediction of the future. And so we make up what the challenge is, how big it's going to be, how long it's going to go on, what's going to come our way. We make up our ability to handle it. In other words, oh, this is the kind of situation I'm terrible at. Oh, that I'm going to be totally overwhelmed there. I'm not going to want to be there. I'm awful in situations like that, blah, 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 blah. And then we believe it, and given that, it would make no sense to keep moving forward. Right? So I make up that. So let's say, okay, let's take a very simplistic example. You know, let's say that I want to go to the store. Okay? And as I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking, God, I don't know if I have enough gas in my car. And if I have to stop for gas, that's going to take an extra 20 minutes. And then I'm going to be late for the appointment that I've got. And do I really need what's at the store? Is it worth risking it? Because boy, John's going to be so mad if I don't make it to the call. And now I've only got 19 minutes, and so on and so on and so on. And so we just never go to the store. Right? Well, that's all well and good when it's just going to the store. But let's say we want a successful career in architecture. I don't know why we're going to say that, but that's what we're saying. Well, you know, I've never been very good at math, and I'm sure there's a lot of math in architecture, and I get daunted in academic settings because my dad was very authoritarian, and I always kind of find teachers remind me of my dad, and I don't do well in that kind of setting. And you know, I don't think architects actually make that much money, and you know, so I'm just going to stay in this other crappy job that I hate, but I already have and is okay. Right? We do the same thing. Now, it's the equivalent of somebody saying, okay, I want to drive to California from New York. Now, I think most people know American geography well enough. Okay, New York over here on the right. You're looking at the map. California over here on the left, east, west. Okay. And you talk yourself out of driving from New York to LA because you're scared of heights. I said, because what does that have to do with anything? Well, the Grand Canyon is right on that route. And I'm liable to go near the Grand Canyon. And if I get to the Grand Canyon, I'm going to get really scared. And I don't want to be scared. So I'm just going to stay in New York. Right? Now, that probably, hopefully, sounds ridiculous to you. But it's the exact same dynamic. of however it is you talk yourself out of taking on whatever it is you'd like to take on. You have a story that seems plausible to you about how hard it's going to be, how difficult you're going to find it, how it's probably not worth it anyways. You believe the thought, and boom, you're done. Right? Now, that's one reason that people turn obstacles into dead ends, you know, that they use an obstacle to stop themselves. The other one I see is that the obstacle gives them an excuse. Now, we talked about this a little on day one. I wrote about it in the blog this week. Actually, I meant to ask you, Lynn, if I don't know if there's a way that we can add both this week's blog and the radio show on the ABCs of Success to the course materials.
I will.
Just things, if you haven't seen them or heard them, I think you'll enjoy both, and they're relevant to our conversation. Well, so what happens sometimes is we see an obstacle that's big enough that we think it lets us off the hook for something we didn't want to do in the first place. Now, we may or may not have even admitted that to ourselves. But when we look at it, you know, we know if the circumstances were different, this would just be an obstacle. This would just be something that I've got to deal with. And I'm, for me, I got nailed by this one on the weekend. And it made me laugh because it was like, wow, still? But I was convinced that there was no point in us moving. We're always moving, but there's no point in us moving this time because, you know, the extra monthly it would take to pay an extra mortgage, the size that it would take to get the kind of house that we would like, would be too much of a pressure on the business, which is, you know, we're now building, and I don't want to take more money out of the business. And I had this great story that really, I didn't even question it. I had numbers written on paper, right? It must be true. And then Nina and I went to Santa Barbara this weekend, and we fell in love with it. And we started looking at house prices, and they're pretty much the same as the houses we were looking at down here. But suddenly my brain, unbidden, betrayed me and started coming up with all these creative ways to get the extra money together. I was like, bloody hell, I fell for it again. I really thought we couldn't do it. I didn't realize, I just didn't want to. Now, again, you know, it's easier to see in hindsight. It's easier for me to see. It's obvious to me now, because as soon as there was something I actually wanted, I suddenly got really creative again. But that's the trick of the mind that we're always up against. It looks like the obstacle is out there. It looks like the insoluble problem exists in the world, and that's half true. There probably is something out there that you'll need to deal with. The Grand Canyon really is on the way from New York to LA, right? I really will need to come up with a way to get some extra cash together if we're going to make a move. You know, there will be bits of going to architectural school that may challenge my current math abilities, right? I may well need to stop for gas on the way to the store. So that's how we convince ourselves that it's not our thinking. But the problem isn't the numbers on my page, finding extra money, the existence of the Grand Canyon, or the presence of math issues in an architectural course. Those are just things. Those are just things that we will find a way to deal with on our way towards wherever it is that we're going. What makes them seem like insurmountable obstacles, as opposed to just obstacles, what makes them seem like things that cannot be overcome, so why waste our time trying, is all up here. It's all thought. Now, the really good news is we know a thing or two about thought. We know it's remarkably fluid. We know it can change on a dime. But only when we recognize it for what it is. See, as long as I think the problem's out there, I'm going to look for the solution out there. The moment I recognize the problem's in here, well, then I can make space for a new thought to arise. I can make space for the world to recreate itself. I can make space for different alternate futures to make themselves up in my head. And I can make space for next steps to appear. So that's our starter, and I hope it's got you thinking a little bit. And we can talk about that, or we can talk about absolutely anything else. And I'll do my best to make it relevant to this program if it isn't obviously relevant when we begin. So Lynn, let's get going. Let's do this thing.
Hey, just a quick reminder, if you go down to your participants at the bottom of the screen, there'll be an option there to raise your hand so that I can bring you on. So today we're going to start with Joel, who is sitting in the dark. So over it, Joel, over to you.
Joel, I'm glad the eclipse finally made it to your part of LA.
Did.
I know, I had felt so cheated, and now it showed up when I least wanted it. No, it's very soothing here. It's actually lighter than it looks on the screen. But, anyway, I hope you can hear it.
Joel's in witness protection. We've kind of blown it by naming him Joel and telling everybody that he's in LA, but you know.
I'm actually a woman and my voice has been altered, but very effectively. So Michael, one of the great benefits that I got from being in Supercoach was that aha moment I had in New York when I realized that the things that looked like obstacles to me were my insecure thinking in the moment taking shape as a specific problem. That was a really great awakening. It's helped serve me a lot. But when I was listening to your setup this morning, it occurred to me that the things that stop me aren't verbalized as thoughts like, whatever. Like often I worry about not being good enough to do what it is that I want to do. But if the obstacle was just on that level, I'm not good enough. I know enough not to pay attention to that and to just move forward. But in my particular case, when I encounter a thought like that, there seems to be an accompanying physiological whatever that I feel completely constrained by. And when I'm feeling that feeling, it's hard for me to make the connection that it's thought. I just don't feel like doing anything. I just don't feel like taking steps in the direction that I think I would like to take those steps in. And so I'm learning now to, you know, wait and wait it out, but it'll pass, what have you. But in recent days, I've revisited that feeling a lot, and I've felt really stymied, and something in your setup sparked my desire to talk to you about that.
Cool. Well, I've got two sort of two tacks that we can take. And the first one is, I'm not good enough has two different things behind it. Mm-hmm. There's I'm not good enough as an evaluation of my current level of skill.
Right.
And to the extent that that's accurate, you know, because I've had people say, well, but, you know, what if it turns out I'm really not good enough? Well, then you'll struggle. You know, then it might not work out.
Right.
That's
never Right.
The I'm not good enough that feels horrible is nothing to do with skill. It's to do with shame. It's to do with worthiness. It's to do with a lack, into my mind, of self-compassion. It's to do with, yeah, it's okay for other people to struggle with their thinking, their lives, their goals, but I know the principles. I'm however old I am. I'm wise. I'm this. So for me, this is really embarrassing. This is really shameful. This is really not good enough. And that feels shitty.
Yeah.
That feels absolutely shitty. Now, the thing is, like you say, though, and this is the other tack, when I just feel shitty, I don't necessarily know that's what's behind it. I just feel shitty. And if I'm like most humans, I look out into the world to see why I'm feeling shitty. And I go, oh, it's because of my shitty life. It's because of my shitty girlfriend, husband, wife, daughter. It's because of my shitty job. It's because of my shitty bank balance. It's because of shitty Trump. It's because of shitty, shitty bank, bank, like whatever. Well, so Sid's definition of psychological well-being, one of the ways that he put it, is when we project the way we feel onto an object outside of us, we are psychologically unwell, even if we feel great. Because, so in other words, even if we're saying, oh, I feel love because of you, oh, I feel happy because of this, it's not necessarily a bad feeling. It's simply the act of projecting our feeling onto an external object is the source of mental unwellness. The ability to feel what we feel without projecting it onto an external is psychological health, even when you feel shitty.
Yeah.
Because it's in line with reality. So if you know that, for me, when I see that, when I'm feeling shitty, personally, I sit in it most of the time. Like, that's just what I do. I sit in the shitty feeling because I've noticed they don't last very long if you sit in them.
Yeah.
I don't try to do anything about them particularly, but I'm suspicious of them, right? I'm going, yeah, I don't know what this is about, but I doubt very much it's about, oh, I had to wake up early this morning. You know, I don't know what this is really about, but I'm really suspicious of my notion that it's about what somebody said to me yesterday. Because I kind of know it doesn't work that way.
Right.
And that does something for me. That allows space for that without it becoming the next set of problems I need to solve. Is anything in there for you? Anything in there that you kind of are seeing or hearing for yourself?
Yeah, there are a few things. First of all, that was a great reminder of that point from Sid about, you know, attributing feelings to anything outside, and how easy it still is to have that be caught up. And then also as you're explaining what your way of handling that is, I realized that a gift of staying in this conversation is that little peanut of awareness that's kind of in the background, that even when the old feelings revisit, there's a little part that says, oh, knowing what I know now, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah. It's that great line. If you're nuts, but you know that you're nuts, you're not that nuts.
Yeah.
Right? So that little kernel is enough.
Yeah. Yeah. That little kernel may very well be the great gift of staying in this conversation with people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I think so. And there's a whole metaphor there about popcorn of insight that I'm not going to go into, but you know, make it up yourselves, people. Popcorn of insight. Write about it on Facebook. I don't know.
I don't like popcorn metaphors because butter's bad for you, and I hate to go there.
Well, there's a lot of research now, Joel, that questions that, but no, okay. All right. Thank you. Nice to not see you.
Thank you, Joel. Okay, next up, let's go to Rex. Go ahead, Rex, all yours.
Hi, thanks very much, Lynn. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Rex. How are you doing?
So, yeah, I'm not so bad. Thank you very much. Good to see you.
Good.
So I sort of have polarized experience this week. At the beginning of the week, I achieved something that I had been troubling me and I'd been trying to achieve for some 30-odd years. And the sequence is sort of quite odd in that I thought, as I got to grips with the three principles, oh, I'll achieve it. And that wasn't getting anywhere. And then I saw a book titled on the subject of the thing I wanted to achieve that came through courtesy of Audible for £2. So I thought, oh, £2, click, I'll have that. Listen to it for 8 hours over 4 days, and then on Monday, sort of followed the process thinking, well, I shouldn't be doing this because this isn't proper three principle stuff. And, well, it's worked. So I'm thinking, way, this is great. I'm fantastic and very pleased with myself in many ways without understanding it and thinking, well, is this what the three principles does for you? Does it deliver things like this? And then today I spent time with somebody who's a sales expert talking about sales, and he's been inviting me to articulate what I do in a very simple way, which I find found extraordinarily difficult to do. And he suggested that I just put together very simple steps. And I'm sitting there feeling quite simply like the village idiot that I wasn't able to articulate things, and I didn't have the simple steps in place. So I was just feeling, you know, internally, a bit rubbish that I didn't have it. And I was thinking, well, perhaps actually this is what the three principles does, is deliver me to a meeting where somebody gives me a call and says, oh, I happen not to be doing what I was doing today. I've got some time. Shall we meet? And then it delivers something that's helpful for me. So interestingly, he observed that maybe my ego is getting in the way. And I was reminded of a conversation with you some 8 months ago where you observed ego, which was big for me but not for you. Well, I say it's big for me, who knows whether it was big for you or not, but I remember it. And I'm thinking, oh right, okay, I don't know where anything fits in, least of all ego. So I fear that there are some obstacles there, but I feel it's what we might call a target-rich environment at the moment. I mean, I could spot it.
All right. Should I just have a go?
Well, please, yeah,
I think I know what's the question behind the question. So I'm going to try and speak to it, and you'll course correct me.
Thank you.
So there's two parts particularly that I want to bring out from what you said. The first is, but it's not the principles, I'm cheating. Right? Okay. That is one of the most common, misperceptions, misunderstandings that is rife within what I see to be the principles community, is the idea that we're supposed to understand the principles and then everything magically happens around us. I've not seen it work that way. What I've seen is that as people understand the principles more, they're much more graceful and elegant in their approach to things. They use one slice where in the past they might have used 10. They wait a little bit longer and then hit the domino, the right domino at the right time. But there's still action involved. I've heard people argue this, but it's a silly argument to me until someone demonstrates it. I don't care how deep your understanding of the principles is. I defy you to sit down at a piano if you've never played one before and play me a concerto.
For sure.
And so where it comes from, that idea that, well, the principles are enough, don't do anything else because it'll just muddy the waters, where that has some truth behind it is in terms of trying to deal with yourself, trying to fix yourself, improve yourself, handle your emotions, control your thinking. Like, that does get muddy when you start mixing and matching, in my experience. But creating in the world is creating in the world. And the degree to which you are in the way of yourself is what the principles helps you with, right? People who get very stuck and muddled up tend to misunderstand the thought-feeling connection, tend to not recognize the nature of the deeper intelligence inside us. Right. And so they try to step in, and this is the ego part of your conversation, and fix it and do it and make it happen. Right? Well, I'll do it. If it's to be, it's up to me. I've got, you know, okay, I got to get off my butt and I've got to make this. Well, that's a misunderstanding of how things get created in the world. And what the principles is very helpful with understanding the principles. The principles are just the principles. But what understanding the principles is very helpful with is you're less inclined to step in the way of a speeding train to help, you know, or to run to the front of the airplane so that you'll get there faster. When you recognize that which is carrying you is carrying you, that you are involved but not in charge, then your relationship with this creative force, with this creative potential, is different. It's healthier because it's more in line with reality. And so you do your bit knowing that all you can do is your bit. And then the kind of extraordinary interplay and interconnectivity of the universe takes care of the rest.
So by being in the game and making myself available to these two events, one of them's gone well. And I think, in fact, I think the other one's gone well as well. I just don't know yet because I haven't done it. Then, and just being available to it presents me with opportunities. And then being open to possibilities, open to ideas, open to suggestions, and in touch with myself, enables me to take best advantage of that. And it'll either work or it won't.
Right, which sounds to me like a really accurate description of reality. Right, somebody who knew nothing about the principles would hear that and go, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. And it seems to me that reality is indeed consistent with the principles. So we're all right.
Well, they're given that they're the principles behind reality, they better be.
Thank you. I think we'll stop while we're ahead.
Excellent. Let's do that. Thank you, Rex. No, it's a really good point, though, just before we move on, Lynn. It's a really good point that Rex makes is actually... We do really well. We're, you know, Jamie Smart says we're built for reality, right? I like that expression because we are. You know, we're built for reality. We do really well with what's on our plate and not so well with what we imagine will be on our plate in the future. And when we see that, we just are more and more inclined to see more about reality, to hang out more in reality and less in our thinking about reality. And we do our best. Cool. Who's got next?
Next, let's go to Jenny Carter. And go unmute it, all yours.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, it's kind of linked into really what you were saying before, Michael, about that thing of whether you really want to do something or not. And what I'm just really finding hard is knowing which thoughts and feelings to trust and which not. Mm-hmm. And I completely know what you're saying about discovering you didn't really want to do it after all. Mm-hmm. And that was the real reason. And that really resonates with me. But how do you know at the time, you know, and kind of, do you just sit with it and...
Okay. So a couple of things. First off, that's the million-dollar question, right? The Living a Guided Life retreat that I did in Mallorca last year that I'm doing in Dubai this year, that's the question at the heart of that. How do you know what to listen to? Because if you've got that, you're set for life, right? Now, here's the short course. You have to get a feel for it in you. So my describing what it's like for me, somebody else describing what it's like for them may be helpful, but may just give you another set of false readings. And here's the thing that I'm going to ask you to do right now. And you can all do this, right? You know, I'm going to talk about it with Jenny. Give me an example at the extremes. So give me an example of something where you absolutely know not to listen. You know it's noise. You know there's no valuable information in it.
Worrying about money in the future.
Okay. So you know, you genuinely, Ginny knows when that comes up, it's like, oh God, you know, there's nothing here for me. Yeah? Okay. Now give me an example of something at an extreme where you absolutely know it's this inner guidance, it's inner wisdom, it's worth listening to.
I think when I switched career, really, when I kind of knew, I just had a knowing that it was the right thing to do, even though I knew there'd be difficulties with it and right. obstacles, but I just knew it was right.
Right. Okay, great. Now, give me another example of a no-brainer Bob shouting in my head, like, you know, where you just kind of know noise.
Okay, yeah. When the weather's horrible, and I think that therefore I've got to feel bad.
Right. Okay, great. You know that. That's not like a story. It's like Ginny knows that, right? Okay, now give me another example of one where at the other extreme, where it's absolutely clear, yeah, this is just right for me. This is, I know this is what's next for me. This is what to do. This is what not to do.
I suppose quite a trivial example is like, if I feel tired, I go to bed.
Okay. Right. Right. Which sometimes for, like, if you think of Joel's example earlier, Joel would spend a lot of time in bed if it was just when I feel tired, I go to bed. There's a knowing about different kinds of tired, right? So the point is, you already have this discernment in you. It's part of our consciousness, this ability to discern amongst the many messages that we get. So it's simply a case of taking something that is already a natural capacity in us, that discernment, and paying more attention to it. And as you bring more attention to it, you'll start to notice it more. As you see, actually, this is the most important thing for me to be able to discern. You'll start to notice all sorts of places where you just know, and all sorts of places where you kind of know it's not worth going there. And then that discernment, that consciousness will expand, it will develop, it will evolve. And more things will become obvious to you. Obviously worth paying attention to, obviously not worth paying attention to. Like, I have a sixth sense about articles on the internet. And it used to piss the kids off all the time, because they'd say, "Dad, have you read about this?" And I would hear it and I would just go, check the source. Because I can just, there's something, I don't know how to even describe it. I just know when something's dodgy. And invariably, it was make-believe. It was fake news. It was something else. We all have that. It's just the extent to which we pay attention to it. And the more we pay attention to it, the more it comes to the fore. It's one of the greatest gifts I think we have as humans, is that consciousness, that ability to discern between signal and noise, between what's worth paying attention to and what's not worth paying attention to.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Ginny.
Thank you. Okay, next up, let's go to Christy, who I think might have made it home.
I did.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm back to work now, but I did make it home yesterday.
Oh.
So, my question
is, saving the world is tiring.
No, I'm not saving the world. Just a tiny little community. So my thing is, I feel like I've had a big lesson in signal noise and in really knowing what's worth going after, because I have been planning a massive career change for a few years, and part of it was out of my control. And a couple months ago, it became within my control. So I wrote the resignation letter, put a date on it. The date's October 2nd. And I did that early August. And within days after doing that, it was like the universe was just like, are you sure? Here's this. And then I get through that and like, wait a minute, here's this. And then wait, there's still a hurricane in there. You know, like there's been things over and over and over again. And everybody's like, are you still going to do it? Like you're going to wait, right? And I'm, no, it's October 2nd. I'm going for it. I don't care what happens. So all these would-be obstacles, it just hasn't mattered. But looking at the calendar, it's 2.5 weeks away. And I even went and looked at the puzzle pieces, the obstacles. I'm like, what is it? And I don't know what it is, but I still, now I'm just like, oh my gosh. You know, it's like jumping off the high dive. Like I remember as a kid, there was this three-story high dive into a spring. I stood there all day trying to decide to jump, and I finally jumped. I'm like, why did I wait so long? And it's almost like that same feeling now. So I'm right there at the high dive, but there's something still there, like, oh my gosh, am I going to really do this? And I can't even put a finger on what it is. But like, I haven't let anything get in my way. So what is it?
Well, I would probably, if we were playing the game of the grid, I'd put it in time. Because you've made up October 2nd. Mm-hmm. Right? So it would be sort of like with your high dive analogy. You know, if you got to the pool at 9 and you went 10:37, I'm diving. Well, all right. Because of the way you just set the game up, your brain's going to be going a mile a minute between 9 and 10:37, second guessing yourself. But at 10:37, right, you'll either jump or you won't. And it will be obvious to 10:37, Christy. See, mm-hmm. October 2nd, Christy will know exactly what to do. But there's no reason to think that September 14th, Christy is going to or should, because mm-hmm. it's not relevant right now. So all you've got is noise generated by that time frame. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure that's fairly frustrating at times, but you know, that's what it is. Right. Yeah. And the fact is on October 2nd, you'll either submit the letter or you won't. Mm-hmm. But on October 2nd, it's going to be a pretty straightforward thing.
Okay.
Because then it becomes binary. See, right now you have a million choices. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's a lot to think about. On October 2nd, you've got one choice, in or out. And mm-hmm. in the moment, you'll know.
And I guess I feel like I already know. Like, to me,
well, you might well. Done. I'm not right. So I'm not saying. But if it was done, then my guess is we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah, you're right.
Right, and that's cool. Like, yeah. I'm not saying it has to be or it should be. But this is where I see more people mess themselves up about decisions, especially ones they think of as big decisions. Mm-hmm. Is they don't like uncertainty. So they make their mind up about something to get rid of the uncertainty. But it's a kind of an artificial making your mind up, because when your mind's actually made up, it's just made up. It doesn't mm-hmm. feel like a decision. It's like, no, I'm out of here, or no, I'm not going anywhere. Right?
Right.
And if you can get a little more comfortable with the uncertainty, you don't need to make it up.
Mm-hmm.
You'll know when you know. And even in this instance, where you may well, look, I'm not suggesting there's anything in anything that you've presented that says you're not going to turn it in on October 2nd, but we'll find out on October 2nd. Not your problem mm-hmm. till then.
I guess so, yeah. And the thing for me too is I'm living in secrecy, because I've been told it's best not to say, hey, I'm going to leave, you know, in mid-October,
yeah.
a month early. But yeah. I'm almost to the point where I just want to come in next week and say, this is what's going to happen sometime in October, and just get it out there. And if they say go home, then I'll be like, okay, bye. You know, so I'm almost at that point yet, because I don't, I want it to be done so bad, but there's still that part of me that like my heart races and there's a pit in my stomach when I think about it sometimes. So that's the noise.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, what you'd expect if you're standing on the edge of a diving board, which is how you've got this made up, but you've made it up as the edge of a diving board, right? This could be, you know, walking out the door of your office to play with the cat. I mean, there's a cat outside the door of my office. That wasn't completely random, right? But like, you know, you don't have to make it up as a diving board.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I know whenever I've got a new book coming out, somebody once asked me in an interview, like, well, you know, are you excited? What do you think? And the most accurate answer I was ever able to give for how it actually, I feel it, is there's a curtain at the back of the room. And I'm walking towards the curtain as the launch begins. And I have no idea if on the other side of the door is like a drop off into outer space, like in movies where you suddenly step through this portal into outer space, is a palace filled with riches, is the pit of despair, or is a continuation of the exact same room I'm in, and there's just a curtain there. Right? I don't know. So it's kind of exciting, but it's not like, oh shit, because there's you know, about the same amount of chance that it's going to be awesome as terrible. So I don't know.
Right. Makes sense. Thank you.
You're welcome, Christy. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next, let's go to Angela. Angela, it is all yours.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Oh, I so wish we could have frozen that angle. Did anyone else think she was graduating from university? The initial angle of your head, that thing looked just like a mortarboard, like a graduation hat with the tassel coming down. Anyways, congratulations on what I just imagined. And go ahead.
I'm so excited. So you began this morning with talking about things that kind of trip us up, you know, and what I heard was that a primary one is self-dialogue. We talk ourselves out of the future by investing in the familiar. And what I noticed, something really remarkable happened yesterday, is the other thing that catches me is when I get a sense of, okay, this is, you know, my heart thing, this is my path, this is what I need to do, a couple of different projects, then I start to predict what I think it's going to look like. Mm-hmm. And that's like a big bugaboo for me. So one of the things I've been mulling around with is, you know, whether to get an office or not, like whether to have an office outside my home, because it can be a bit kind of, you know, I mean, there are times when it gets to me. And so I often think, oh, well, you know, should I get an office or not? And then there's the whole commitment of, okay, well, if I do, here's what that means. And so I've researched and what would that be and what, you know, where would I like to be? And for about a year, maybe a year and a half. So yesterday I got this strong message that I just needed to go and get another laptop because I've been wanting a lighter weight MacBook so that I'm more mobile when I go and write. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't, like, I'm just like, what? Like, do I really have the, of course I had the money. I mean, you know, it wasn't even putting it on the credit card. And I went and I got it. And by the time I got home, I realized, you know what? Like, there's your office. Like mentally, that's going to create enough space in my life that doesn't have to overlap with anything else that I've got going on in my existing space. And so it became like, the next step, like, I don't know, maybe one day, like I'll get a great office or maybe I won't, I don't know. But meanwhile, you know, here's like an immediate solution. And it was something that just never occurred to me because I had this idea of what getting an office, you know, would look like or would be like or whatever. So that was really good information for me, is to notice. And then you referred to it when you talked about projecting, like we project things onto, you know, qualities sometimes onto people that we think they should have, or, you know, selective listening or selective looking for things. Mm. So I liked how it tied in with when you mentioned that Sid's definition of insecure thinking manifests as an obstacle. And you know, when we're not projecting, then we're really in a state of mental health. So anyway, There's all kinds of solutions that I'm not thinking of because I've already drawn a picture of what I think it should look like.
Right. And that's exactly it. Like it might manifest as a picture. It might manifest in inner dialogue, but right. It's the fundamental act of believing what you're thinking.
Yeah.
And the neat thing is we can get away with it. Like we can do that and then still get the impulse to get the laptop and realize all that thinking was a fantasy. So it doesn't even the fact that we do this isn't a real obstacle. It's just, it's a little more pleasant when we give it less credence earlier in the process. Right. And we will automatically give it less credence the more we see it for what it is.
Yeah. And so that, you know, that actually naturally moves us to the front of the plane to get there faster. Yeah. I got it anyway. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be an effort. It's like, okay, well, how's the universe going to move me? You know, right. Becomes a more relaxed way of being and just way freaking more fun. And because I went yesterday, they had some kind of like back to school special on, and I ended up with a $300 pair of Beats that came with the laptop because I happened to go yesterday. Like it was like, oh yeah, okay, well something about this is right. Yeah.
So I mentioned on the first call that my first book was originally called Soul Path, and the phrase was things unfold as if by design. That's a great example of it. It's like, oh, hang on, I happen to do this at this time, and this happens to be there. And it's like, that seems to come with the territory of living from mind.
Mm-hmm. And nurturing that, what you just said about bringing more attention to signal, like just, so maybe even like spending a few minutes with that, okay, here's what happened, and just internalizing or being more aware of what that feels like.
Well, and that's, for me, that's even now it's becoming a thing, listening to signal.
Okay.
Like we
all right.
do it automatically.
Okay.
It's built in.
Okay. Right? It's not like I got to do reps with it.
It's not actually, right. Absolutely. Because it's not like I need to learn to pay attention to signal. I just need to notice I already do.
Nice. Yeah. Lovely.
Very cool.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Next up, who have we got? Let's go to Carolina. You're up next. Go ahead. Nice to see your face.
Hi. Nice to see you too.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, I remember you. Hi.
Yeah. Hi. Wow. Today's call it's been very helpful for me. And I think that it's maybe because today I think I'm a bit quieter on the inside than the other day. So I'm hearing really more.
Yeah.
And what you said at the beginning about our mind coming up with potential obstacles, and then we just stop ourselves from moving in the direction. I could see it in action even today because I wanted to raise my hand, but my head started to give me all the reasons why I shouldn't, you know, because we have limited time and I cannot articulate myself and so on and so on. But I pressed it anyway. Okay. So, the obstacle that feels like the biggest one for me at the moment, I think seems to be in the category of energy. And not being tired and not having energy, but rather the energy being really scattered and going in many different directions. And to be honest, I feel very envious to people who are able to just focus on one thing and just take it from the beginning till end. And for instance, launch a product and really focus on one thing, because my interest seems to change all the time. And it's very difficult for me to keep focus on one thing. I've been working for several months now with a coach who is helping me to launch an online course. And it was extremely difficult for me to even define my audience and pick a topic. And it's been like my interest shifts and changes. So I don't know. I'd love to have an insight about it that would help me make things easier.
Okay. So the first thing that that I would, that, that kind of jumped out when you were speaking is, it's a popular notion that we need to have single-minded focus in order to succeed. It's not true at all. Most of the most successful people I know are incredible multitaskers. Now, putting aside whether or not multitasking is really single tasking with many switches, mm-hmm. I understand there's a lot of debate in the brain science community around that. Mm-hmm. But it's not true. It's like, you know, the idea that, I mean, most of the most successful people I know, I'm sure would be diagnosed as ADD if they thought they had a problem. So you need to be able to maintain focus enough mm-hmm. to see something through. But how much that is really up for grabs. So the first thing is to kind of take the pressure off yourself to live up to some made up ideal of how successful people do it. Mm-hmm. Because then something natural in you can start to emerge. Mm-hmm. Then you can find Carolina's way of doing it, mm-hmm. which I guarantee you won't look like the textbook. Mm-hmm. Right? The second thing is that what strikes me as far cooler than being able to shine my flashlight in one direction for a long period of time is having a flashlight, mm-hmm. is recognizing that at some level, I have this gift of attention. Mm-hmm. And that the more settled down I am in myself, mm-hmm. the more I'll know exactly where to shine the flashlight when. And sometimes I'll flash it in a bunch of different places, and sometimes I'll flash it in one place till I see something. Mm-hmm. And I won't have a preference for single flashlight or many flashlights. Like it's sometimes one's going to be more appropriate, sometimes another, and my wisdom will guide me there. Mm-hmm. So I win by settling down. Mm-hmm. And I settle down by seeing that there's nothing to rile myself up about. Mm-hmm. I don't have a focus problem that I've got to fix. I don't have a fundamental issue that's going to stop me from succeeding. I don't need to learn how to be different to how I am. I may along the way make adjustments, but I'll make them because it's obvious to me. Mm-hmm. I'll make them because I say, oh, this doesn't work for me. I need to find another way, and then I will. But it'll be honest. It'll be from me. It won't be from a coach, a textbook, mm-hmm. a way of being in the world that I've heard successful people have. Like one of the most interesting pieces of research I ever read was from Marcus Buckingham, who's a management consultant, written a number of books, used to work with Gallup, the polling organization, and he wrote a book called The Only Thing You Need to Know, I think was the title, and then it was about three different things, and one of them was long-term sustainable success. And so he there was this study, and they looked into, so they, in order to qualify for the study, you had to have been at or near the top of your field for 20 years or more. Mm-hmm. So that's all they were interested in. They weren't interested in people who'd gotten lucky. They weren't interested in people who'd, even if they'd gotten super duper lucky, they wanted people who'd maintained over time. And he said it was fascinating because the one thing, the only unifying characteristic they could find in all these people wasn't single-minded focus. It wasn't confidence. It wasn't self-belief. It wasn't brushing their teeth in the morning or meditating or any kind of thing that we learn we're supposed to do. It was they figured out what they didn't like doing and they'd stop doing it.
Huh.
And consequently, their lives had a simplicity to them that allowed them the kind of focus that is needed to sustain at the top or near the top of your field over time.
Oh, wow. I really like it. Yes, because in the last days, I've noticed I'm really distracted by things that I don't like doing, but I think that I should learn them because it's necessary, about online marketing, and I'm spending lots of time researching and reading, but I don't know, I feel a bit heavy there. It's not something that really interests me.
So, you know, there's two ways to go. You know, when you're kind of confronted with that data, right? Mm-hmm. One is, okay, so I'm going to figure out what I don't like doing and stop doing it. And the other is, I'm going to fall in love with everything I do. Right? And they're both legit.
I can see it.
And the fact that we can fall in love with everything we do means that the fact that we can't outsource some things isn't a problem. But I'll just fall in love with those things.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice to see you again.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
Okay, time to squeeze one more in, Michael.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's go to another familiar face. Atina, you're up next. All yours.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. I had a million questions just before coming on the call. But just now, as I was listening to Carolina, actually before that, I realized that my biggest impediment or whatever that I see is the fact that I like everything that I do. So my full-time job is a scientist, and I absolutely like that. And I like all the side projects that I'm involved with as part of that. But then I want to do all these other things, and I want to start this coaching business, and I struggle to find the time for that, and I struggle to cut them down, to cut something out of my schedule, because I love to do everything that I do.
So I'm having a hard time being convinced you have a problem.
Well, it's because I'm tired, and then I get angry when I'm very tired.
Oh, okay.
So I am angry at myself. Why did I get myself into the situation of being this sort of tired? Because I get at the limit of exhaustion, and then I just take 2 days off.
So when do you have discernment about how you spend your time? Like, you couldn't have gotten to any level in a scientific field if you didn't have the capacity to focus in on the important things, even if some of the time you just grab at every shiny object. So what's an example of a time or a place or a situation where actually you're very discerning about how you spend your time?
Oh, sorry. My phone just fell down. Perfect timing. Give me a second. But when I don't have time for my partner, that's when I realize, oh my God, I haven't spent any time with him for the past a week. And that's when I actually realize, or when someone tells me, you haven't called me in a while, that's when it becomes a problem.
Okay, so that's the answer to the opposite of what I asked you. What I asked you is, when do you do it well? When do you make good use of your time in your mind?
When I wake up very early in the morning. And then I just start doing the regular things. But if I'm tired, I then...
Okay, so you're about to answer a different... You're about to answer a different question again. You're an expert on why you're fucked up. I don't need any more information on that. All right. So your homework, because we're coming to the end of the call, your homework between now and tomorrow, and you can just put it up on Facebook, if you're on Facebook, is to find some examples of when you do really well around this. And just as an example, unless you're somebody who misses flights, right? My guess is you're pretty good at managing your time when you've got a flight coming. Now, you might tell me you miss flights all the time. That's possible too. But that's what I'm looking for. I'm asking you to look for, where do I actually already have this discernment? And then we'll see what that opens up about the difference between when you make use of that and when you don't. Do you understand what I'm asking you to do?
Yes.
You don't have to understand why, but you...
let me see if I get this right. So you want me to find out when I do this well, and I'm happy with the results.
Yeah, and I would maybe even take happy with the results off the table, because you just might be a really harsh judge.
Okay.
Like, when do you do it well, whether you're happy with the results or not?
All right.
All right, and we'll pick it up from there.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Adina. Thank you, everybody. We got one more tomorrow. So I will see you at 7:59 and 37 seconds tomorrow.
Thank you very much for alerting me. I will be here a little bit earlier.
Probably best. Yeah. Sure.
I'm going to see you all for the final time tomorrow, guys. I'm going to unmute you all. Talk to you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy the rest of your day.